This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. There are many kinds of success in Hollywood. You can win all the Oscars like Tom Hanks, or command huge salaries like Tom Cruise and Harrison Ford, or make a stunning comeback in mid-career like John Travolta. And then you could spend years of your life covered in fake blood and chicken guts chasing down she-witches and delivering lines like, "Give me some sugar, baby." That's been the path of my guest, Bruce Campbell, the jutting chin star of such unforgettable mock horror vomitorium comedies as The Evil Dead, The Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness, all directed by Sam Raimi. You might also recognize Bruce Campbell for his television roles in the popular series Xena, Warrior Princess, and Hercules, which he also directed for 5 years. Campbell's memoir, If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor, is now out in paperback. Let's listen to this clip from Army of Darkness, the last in the Evil Dead series. In this scene, the hero, Ash, played by Bruce Campbell, recaps the convoluted story of the previous two films.
It seems an archaeologist had come to this remote place to translate and study his latest find. Necronomicon Ex Mortis, the Book of the Dead. Found in human flesh and inked in blood, this ancient Sumerian text contained bizarre burial rites, funerary incantations, and demon resurrection passages. It was never meant for the world of the living. The book awoke something dark in the woods. It took Linda. And then it came for me. It got into my hand and it went bad, so I lopped it off at the wrist.
We could go on, but I think that's enough. So what the heck is that all about, Bruce Campbell? Did you ever actually follow the plot of these movies as you were making them?
Yeah, it only takes about 30 seconds to figure it out. it really, you know, when we, I met Sam Raimi in high school in 1975, back in Michigan, outside of Detroit. We're both suburb boys.
Not only Sam Raimi, but also John Cameron, right?
John Cameron, who now produces the Coen Brothers movie, and Rob Tappert, who then went on to produce the Xena and Hercules and shows like that.
So you guys were all high school buddies?
Almost all of us. Mm-hmm. There were about five of us that met between junior high. The guy who took the cover, the picture on the cover of the book, I met him in kindergarten. Uh-huh. And then we met other guys in junior high school who made little independent movies. I met Sam in high school. And by that point, it was sort of a neighborhood thing. I was doing little Super 8 movies in my neighborhood. Another buddy of mine was in his. Sam was in his. And then when you get to junior high, neighborhoods merge, you know. And I first saw Sam in eighth grade. He was dressed. This is the guy who directed Spider-Man. You know, he's sitting on the floor dressed as Sherlock Holmes playing with dolls. He claimed he was making a movie. I think he was just out of his tree. So I went way around. I remember specifically going across the hall, and then I didn't meet him officially for another couple of years because he was this freak kid. And so we started making movies together. Uh-huh. And what happened was they were all silly, very silly. Three Stooges, Marx Brothers, very derivative stuff. But then we thought, okay, high school's ended. What do we do for a job? We thought, well, maybe we could do this. Maybe we could do what we really have enjoyed. We didn't go to the prom. We didn't date. We didn't do any of that stuff. We just made Super 8 movies. It kept us out of a lot of trouble.
Well, what did you specialize in? Did you do camera, sound, or
well,
a bit of everything?
Well, I think because I was taller than most of the other guys and sort of had a square jaw, they went, you, get in front of the camera. And we all did everything. But we really felt for the first movie, if we were going to get real money from real investors, we were afraid that in Detroit we would just get shut down if we didn't get them their money back. So what we did was we decided to make a no-holds-barred rock'em sock'em horror film, because in the industry, there's a certain amount of staples. You go into Blockbuster, you're going to have horror films. You're going to have comedies. You're going to have... So we wanted to make sure we could do a movie that would find a slot. But then on top of that, we tried to really take the gloves off and say, we don't want to get lost in the shuffle here. So Sam Raimi concocted this crazy story of five kids go to a cabin in the woods, find some cool stuff in the basement. Among that is some of the artifacts this professor dug up. It's a creepy tape. They play the tape, come across an incantation that he was reciting. They unleash this long dormant evil, and one by one they get possessed. So it's sort of an old-fashioned monster movie that we shot in Morristown, Tennessee in 1979.
I have this image of you and your buddies raising money in the Midwest for this film that came to be The Evil Dead. And you describe making cold calls to friends of friends and family, and that you screened this college horror film you made at dinner parties attended by dentists.
Oh, yeah, we went to one that was in particular. It was four dentists and their wives were getting together for a dinner party to watch this movie. What we did is we made a Super 8 movie to show investors. It was called Within the Woods. It was a similar story. Huh. But it was horribly...
Of evil unleashed.
Oh, yeah, yeah, same story, just a way shorter. Because we said, this is a prototype. If you like this, the real movie will be way better.
Right.
And we ruined dinner after dinner. I mean, after they'd see it, they'd go, oh, I'll just have a cup of coffee, you know. We had one guy who invested who refused to see the movie. He says, you can show this to my business partners. I don't like these movies. I don't understand them. They scare me. They make me sick. I don't know what your problem is, but I'll invest in it if my friends think it's good. He was happy he did because he made about over 10 times his money back.
Really?
All the
After
Evil
about
investors.
40 years, right?
They made 10 times their money back in 40 years. It took 6 years to break even.
Uh-huh. This is from The Evil Dead.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And then finally, by making a sequel, it was one of these situations where the rights fee wound up putting us into profit.
They are funny. I mean, that's the whole point of a really great movie, B movie.
Yeah.
It's a really good bad movie. And
in a way, yeah. Because what happened? Evil Dead is the first one. It's funny because it's a failed melodrama. The writing is very, you know, come on, we've got to bury Shelley. We can't bury Shelley. She's a friend of ours. You know, I mean, we're legitimately trying to say lines of dialogue like that. The best that we could at the time. We had no reference points of what was funny, or we weren't trying to be funny. People always say, oh, that was such a campy movie. Yeah. The first one is not a campy movie. It's actors trying to figure out what the heck is going on.
Well, let's hear some from The Evil Dead. We have a clip. Now, I'm going to do my best to explain what's going on here, and you can correct me. This scene is towards the end of the movie, and you, as Ash, and your friend... Actually, your friend has just been mauled by dead demon zombies.
This is a dark point in the movie. Things are bad for our hero.
Your friend is dying on the floor of the cabin.
He was the guy that the audience was really following. My character in the first Evil Dead movie is a very milquetoast, generic college kid. And then greatness is thrust upon him.
Exactly.
And this is a moment of crisis. You'll see he doesn't handle it very well.
The demons are surrounding the cabin.
They're all over.
And that's basically all I could say. Here we go. Let's listen.
We're all going to die here.
No, we're not going to die.
We're all going to die. All of us.
No, we're not going to die.
We're not going to die. We're going to get out of here.
Now, listen to me, Scotty. Is there a way around the bridge?
Scotty, listen to me, please, for God's sake. Scott!
Come on.
Ash, I don't want to die. You're not going to leave me, are you, Ash? Are you?
I don't want to die. You're not going to leave me here, are you? Are you, Ash?
And those are the demons, right?
Yeah, a little trivia there for you. There's an eerie wind that you hear there, and throughout most of the movie, once things start to go really bad. Sam Raimi was awakened at about 3 o'clock in the morning by this sound coming through the window in where he was staying. We were all staying in the house together. He grabbed the sound man, went down the hallway, woke him up, said, come on, get your recorder. So they sat in there for about a half an hour getting this really creepy wind that was coming through a window. And that wound up being... I've heard it in other movies now.
Oh, it's been recycled.
Oh, yeah, sure, because it's a dead wind. It's a very constant, creepy presence, and it's good. And then there was a little grunting in there when I was trying to wake the guy back up into consciousness. That's Sam Raimi throwing in a few kind of... The actors were long gone, you know. We had to sort of finish this thing without them.
But you were laughing as we were listening to this clip.
I can't help it. Yeah. The dialogue is so hokey and we're so bad at it. It's unbelievable. It's only later, Evil Dead 2 is considered someone coined a phrase, splatstick.
Well, yeah, there's a kind of Three Stooges-like quality to Evil Dead 2 where you have a certain satiric edge to the whole
take
on the genre.
That was just a... that was us getting more familiar with how to manipulate audiences and how to do this right. The first film is really a cruel trick to be almost best known for your first work that you would rather shove under the table.
Bruce Campbell's memoir, If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor, is out in paperback. We'll talk more after the break. This is Fresh Air. We're back with actor Bruce Campbell. He starred in the Sam Raimi cult films The Evil Dead, The Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness. His memoir is If Chins Could Kill. Now, there were a number of things that Sam Raimi invented during this shoot that I think he continued to perfect over the course of his career.
Actually, to be fair, we actually all kind of kicked around a lot of these ideas.
Oh, came up with these.
Camera guys as well. Sam named them after himself.
The shaky cam. Now, that's the horror movie.
Yeah, shaky cam was a way to get the camera to be... Sam had a lot of shots that he needed of an evil entity, a disjointed point of view that was roaming through the woods. Mm-hmm. So he used a very wide-angle lens for that. And then pretty much concocted this scheme where you grab a 2x6 on either end, put the camera in the middle, and then you can raise it over bushes, and it's very...
Or you can just run like...
Yeah,
like
you can run like crazy, mm-hmm. Exactly. And you get really low to the ground. It was a pretty... It cost about $1.50, I think.
And you're the Ramo cam.
See, what happens is Sam comes up with shots first, and then everyone goes, okay, how do we do this? There's two versions of it. It got higher budget as we got higher budget. The first Ramo cam was a guy with a piece of wood, with a T-shaped piece of wood, that he would run right behind the camera, and he hoped that he would smash the window with the board before the camera guy got there. So, but the gag is, while the camera guy is going through the window, I mean, broken glass is falling all over him. So it was like, well, that sort of worked, I guess. And then for Evil Dead 2, the camera had to go all the way through the back of a car. The camera had to start on the ground, come up to the car, break through the back windshield, go through the car, break through the front windshield, and keep going. And it wound up being this giant... By that point, we could afford a mechanical effects guy who could build stuff. And Sam said, here's a shot I want to do. And so they concocted this Ramo camera. It was a giant metal beam that it took about five or six of us to help. We had to run along with the camera, hoist it up, and then sort of funnel it through the car quickly. But on one take, we ran into the trunk. We destroyed the rearview mirror on another take. The mechanical effects guy had to blow the windows with a squib at just the right point. So at one point, we hit the window. It took us about 10 or more tries to get that.
A lot of your demons had white, or when the various characters would become demonized, their eyes would go from normal eyeballs to these white filmy
things. That's right, yeah.
And
the possessed look.
The possessed look, right, the back from the dead look. And apparently you used something called sclero contact.
Sclero lens, they were nasty. They cover your entire eye, and they're glass. And in 1979, there was no gas permeable, there was no soft lens of any kind. So they had to go in for sort of training. You had to pick up the top eyelid, shove it under, hold it under while you drag the bottom eyelid and hope to get under the lip and then put it up. And the actors had 15 minutes because then they had to get them out because your eye is not breathing during that 15-minute period.
So your eyeball could suffocate.
So you're blind and you can't see. And so what we would do is block out like two shots that we could get during that 15-minute period. Mm-hmm. And you can only do this five times a day. So it was really, we got to the point where we would just say, look, just close your eyes and we'll paint your eyelid white. And it worked just as well for shots that were further away that we didn't want to hassle with that stupid 15-minute thing.
And run with your eyes closed.
Oh, yeah, doing everything with your eyes closed. I had to fight this one actress, Betsy Baker's coming at me with a knife. And she can't see anything. And Sam's going, all right, you're really upset, see? I want you to really swing at him like you're going to get him. I'm like, okay, I'm glad this will be on film.
Now, do you know the recipe for fake blood by heart?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Easy. Karo syrup. Uh-huh. Clear Karo syrup. K-A-R-O. It's in your pancake aisle.
Well, sure, yeah. Pecan pie.
Yeah, you want to get that. Then you want to get those little bottles, actually the big bottles of red food coloring. They're a single bottle. Take all the red food coloring, dump it in there, shake it up, but then you'll notice that it's opaque. And you don't want that. That's too cheesy.
No, blood, you need something viscid and...
Yeah, blood, you have to make it opaque. It's too clear.
Right, it's too clear, yeah.
So we would take coffee creamer, like a Mr. Coffee, non-dairy. That's the best, because you don't want it to spoil. It's all this fake stuff is really good for fake blood. So you mix it together into a paste. You have to use like warm water so it doesn't get lumpy. It's like a good pancake mixture. Then you mix it in slowly, and you have a nice opaqueness. But sometimes it can get pinkish red. So you take just a couple of drops of blue food coloring. It gives it a little bit of body. Don't go too crazy, or you'll start getting purple. So
there's an art to this.
Then you test it. You mix it all up. You test it on a white porcelain sink, like your bathtub or something. Just let it drip down, and you'll see. You can test the color. It works great.
Kind of a psycho test.
Yeah, it attracts flies. But you know what? It's actually better and way cheaper than that crappy stage blood you buy at your local Spencer's Gifts or whatever.
Well, you must have emptied out every grocery store in Tennessee.
Oh, and it's small. Well, what was very embarrassing, though, is a lot of special effects guys use KY jelly. They use all these lubricants. And in many cases, these poor guys have to go into towns and they buy boxes of condoms because those are blood bladders. They use them as balloon type things.
Explode. So what does this feel like on you as an actor when you're covered in this stuff?
It becomes really candy-like. It is. It's the basis for candy. So
how about when it dries?
My shirt would stick to me. It would stick completely to every hair in my body. So I'd go to stretch and just rip out a whole shank of hair. I'd walk home and just go right into the shower. We had a white pickup truck that didn't stay white for very long that we rented that we destroyed. And I'd sit in the back of it coming home from the shoot. We would shoot all night long, and then I'd come home at 6 o'clock in the morning, or sometimes one morning was a Sunday morning. People were out going to church, and I looked like a serial killer in the back of this pickup truck, kind of waving to people, because it was the only way to do it. No one would let me in their car. And so we'd start the shower. I just would walk right in with the clothes on, because it had to melt the Karo syrup off it.
Bruce Campbell's memoir is If Chins Could Kill. It's now out in paperback. This is Fresh Air.